March 2, 2009, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Crushed up and I'm out of space for more dents. Just a pushed in face and a deepening mud. Something stronger. Tried anything but a punched out mouth, still bleeding words. No one makes out. You're an injured ego maniac.
You're absorbed.
Growing me time, there are absorbs everywhere. So let them bleed. Let them bleed.
Watt from Pedro show. Kind of a different one, Brother Matt. It's a Monday night.
Evening, actually.
Evening show. We have some guests.
Yeah. Welcome.
Hi.
Bob Stiers.
Hello.
They're not going to introduce themselves.
No.
We have no couch people this time.
No.
What's that about?
I have couch stories.
Yeah, but first let me tell you what we played. We started the show with John Coltrane, live in Stockholm, Sweden, 1963, Training In. Then we heard Push Face Friend by Brian Flynn, who is nephew of Raymond Pettibone.
Yeah, Brian.
I got to
Brian Flynn.
Share the stage twice this weekend with Raymond and... who's an associate of the Niche Makers. Mr. Bob Stiers was a witness too, right?
Yes, it was.
What was your opinion?
I enjoyed it. It was kind of strange to see things sort of slapdash on Friday and still a little slapdash on Sunday in a good way.
I didn't go.
I really thought, they were enjoyable. And it was nice to hear Watt outside where the bass was rumbling the ground.
Cool. Second one was at Bergamot Station in Santa Monica. First one was Spacelet in Silver Lake.
That was last night.
So what did you think of Robert Berman's trumpet playing?
He did that at both gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right up there with Jeffrey Lee
Pierce. And he was interpreting Raymond lyrics.
That's cool.
For the last number. I was telling Brother Matt about the Niche Makers. Maybe you could elucidate on that.
Peek? No.
Oh, me? I'm sorry.
Peek didn't witness any of it.
No, I wasn't.
Well, they're sort of
you went to the social thing Saturday?
Amalgamation of
did you go?
Musicians.
When?
I don't remember.
Raymond said he went.
What but is it?
They kind of reminded
me of
Nikon's.
There was no bands. It was just people
bit.
For the art.
Where was it?
Same place, Sunday.
Okay.
It was all around this thing for an event called Paper, Scissors, Rock.
Mm.
Rock, Scissors, Paper.
Rock, Scissors, Paper.
Rock, Scissors, Paper.
You just lose.
And it was people with art from punk scene like Kevin Thurston and Gibby and Daniel Johnston.
Right.
But, you know, the highlight for me actually was, and I have to thank John Cornway,
Johnny
put it
together,
that I met just before Raymond's last show that he did, and explaining this whole concept, but he's the one, I was glad, he was right next to me when you guys were doing Little Johnny Jewel with Lee Rinaldo, and I just personally thanked him for bringing Lee Rinaldo out here, and... Lee was a highlight for me to see him up there with a noose and then to attach his guitar to it and proceed to do a sonic assault with drumsticks and whatnot, but yet keep it very melodic and not... It was fascinating. It was really nice to see full circle that sort of sonic
use. Yeah, well, I asked you about Niche Makers.
Niche Makers? Well, they're kind of like a skiffle band. They're kind of like
the
Mekons. They're kind of a little bit of John Wayne in terms of the kind of merry pranksters, funky, corny
wasn't
humor.
Wasn't it a few bands?
I could see, yeah. Yeah, there was some side mice running all over the place. In fact,
really, Raymond didn't get...
Was Raymond actually part of it?
There's
a baseball bat that says Raymond Pettibone and the Niche Makers, but... I thought it was more like the Niche Makers occasionally with Raymond.
No, he did the last three. One was called The Road Less Taken.
Yeah.
Funny. One was Frankie. And one, I think, was... you asked me the word, right?
Well, it's kind of the eponymous, the equivalent of Big Country doing Big Country, the song called The Niche Makers. And I kind of enjoyed that, but it kind of reminded me of Prairie Home Companion or something, you know? Garrison Keillor type of American... middle America, cornball, with a little bit of an artsy meat con sort of.
There was a poet involved, right? M.S. Garvey?
I kind of liked him. He reminded me of one of the Merry Pranksters because he was kind of outrageous, psychedelically outrageous without any electricity. He did Sky Pilot, Eric Burdensong, a cappella, standing in water. It was pretty cool. That made it for me yesterday, you know. It got weirder yesterday at the gallery, which is good to see.
He busted out into the pit.
Yeah. He did some dancing that looks like the inspiration for the original, you know, Circle Jerks skank. You know,
mosh. Skank, but nobody ever called it mosh.
No, the people that called it mosh, that was when metal was in. It was the pit.
Slam.
Thank God
slam.
I have pointy elbows, because, you know, if your hair was longer than an inch and a half in the old days, hey, hippie, I'm going to kill you, hippie.
You couldn't see this man's hair. He was wearing a flight cap, a sailor cap on Friday, but Sunday he had a aviator from first.
Yeah, like I said, he had that horny Americana sort of Keezy, Ken Babbs, Stuart Brand thing that was kind of refreshing. He was a one-man show in and of himself, so in some ways he was kind of the glue that held them together.
He was kind of MC.
Yeah, without any hammer.
Was MC.
Master of ceremonies. We have a fine shoe for you tonight. For the Beatles, we have Topo Gigio.
No, sir.
Speaking of side mouse.
Senor Wences.
Yeah. The guy spinning the plate.
My name is Jose Jimenez.
Bill
Dana.
Sarai.
Raymond had that as lyrics.
Raymond was funny.
He worked in Señor Wences.
You have to know your cultural literacy.
In Los Pumpkinheads. We were recording the Los Pumpkinheads album, and Raymond's doing the singing. And he worked in Señor Wences into one of the tunes.
He has this deadpan delivery.
I want to hear back.
That if you aren't aware
of... photographing.
We need to have a...
Were you there for one of the sessions, Bob?
No, I...
We've had three so far.
I mean, I want to hear...
I'm looking forward to the...
Oh, but you were taunting like you were going to try to come by.
I taunt the gigs.
You taunted the gig.
Well, I think he needs one of those
teletaunters.
So that we could, in the audience, can see the words, because Raymond stuff goes over most people's heads, or they're not hanging on every word, which they would be if they knew what he was really saying.
It was interesting.
Assuming they could understand his obscure, literal references.
It was chock full of irony.
Really, it's a trip.
Very much so. And done with his very much the straight man, Jack Benny, sung a la Stan Ridgway out of the side of the mouth, which he probably is not happy to hear that, but too bad, man. You got up there. This is what we saw. If nothing else, that'll make him think about something else now. You got to keep a guy like that on his toes.
It seemed like the whole band was a straight man.
Yeah, they were. They were in search of a leader, I guess.
And Ron English was there, the artist, and he wasn't in the band. He wrote the lyrics for their songs.
So he did
some pretty interesting.
I thought Raymond wrote the lyrics. That's where I'm confused.
Raymond wrote lyrics for Niche Makers, but for the Electric Illuminati or something.
Oh, yeah.
That was Ron English's. I think they were from Colorado, these cats. The guy had a bass made from a mannequin calf and foot.
Nice.
He had to sign that thing. Yeah. And he was kind of...
And you did?
After the second kid, he's a nice cat. But he was really worried if he was out of tune.
Well, I think when he had you and Flea there in the audience, he's kind of getting a little self-conscious about his old bass there. You know, that could do it to anyone, I think.
Those mannequin bases are known for not staying in tune.
Well, it's the plastics.
Yeah, it was a trip. You know,
the cat
made it makes bases out of all kinds of shit.
Found objects.
It's not just mannequin legs. Whatever you bring him, he
can work it out.
Is that the guy from Idiot Flesh, or formerly known as Idiot Flesh, makes instruments too like that?
Yeah.
The bass guy that made it out of crazy stuff.
Yeah, this was out of a mannequin leg. And, Lee's gig was really interesting solo. What he does a lot with his solo things is he has projector slides. I think it's called Light and Text or something he does with his wife, Leah. But the Spaceland had no facility for that, so he had to just do guitar and stomp boxes. And he told me right before the gig he didn't know what he was going to do, but he improvised a really good set.
I enjoyed them quite a bit,
actually. And we had him come on board for the last three tunes, big jams. And he had blown up one of the amps during his gig, so he had to plug into Tom's. They both were out of the same amp. Tom actually came up a song before and did a singing duet with Pete. These were the last two Second Men gigs for a while. So that guy switched over to Missing Men mode. But he's kind of stiff the first gig, you know, Friday at Spaceland. And then Sunday, he took my mic and got off the stage. He was in the pit and dancing. Yeah. He's in a hell of a rage.
Well, what about Bob Lee? He looked like he was having some major kindergarten kind of fun there.
Yeah, the second gig we had Bob Lee come up. And Tom brought a littler amp. I asked him why later. He said the other one was too heavy. Man, I don't want to hear shit like that.
That could be a liability when you guys go on that 57-day tour there, man. Better be careful.
No, and they look at my amp. You know, little lunchbox, styrofoam, fish bobber. So, you know, I don't want to hear Pete with this 300-pound B5. You know, we don't want to hear that. Puts this little thing on the chair. So, Bob Lee was, I guess he borrowed opening band's floor tom and snare and was right behind Jer, so they were kind of duet drumming. And got to a point in one of the tunes where I wanted to hear Tom. So we got little, man. I mean, we were just barely playing. Still couldn't hear him. So I'm going to Bob Lee, you know. You can't see this on the radio, but I'm making a little clockwise motion with a finger. Yeah, I'm saying, turn up Tom, turn up Tom. Well, Bob Lee's done a lot of gigs, so hearing him. He thought I was saying, play out of time.
Oh,
like man. I always give that to man. Start playing out of time.
Not weird.
I didn't know this till after, but now it makes sense why all of a sudden the beat started going all whack.
That's awesome, and I missed it.
That's cool.
So
that's
sad right now.
That's like Willie trying Chinese to change telephone. Up the pace on
one degree of Chinese telephone. It was interesting though. It was fun to play with people, with your friends like that, and.
Well, with Lee Rinaldo, even though you couldn't hear him at the start, just watching the intensity of him trying to plug in, Tom was playing a lot better.
The amp
he actually, Tom got into playing Seizing the Moment somewhat.
The amp he was using was blown up, so finally it was just like, he can't stop the gig.
Jeez, like
although
that's never happened to
him before. Although we did
stop
the second gig because they had the PA in a different ground than the stuff the amps were plugged into, and I was getting bit with shocks like motherfucker.
That's artist for you.
And, you know,
I think
the solution is you find the box that that's plugged into, and you just plug into the same. You know. Man, that was hurting me bad.
Well, did you stop to pause and think maybe it was that haymaker you threw at one of the niche makers? Before the gig, then maybe she electrified
None
you on purpose.
None of those people who played sang really, so they didn't have the problem of holding an amplified instrument and then their lips going on the mic, so they couldn't know. Raymond was holding the lyrics. Raymond had a folder about 2 inches thick. Kind of interesting. Friday before the gig, he's rewriting them all. Because, you know, it's kind of microfiche sized.
Sideways.
Yeah, he was a lot more nervous the first one. But yeah, I thought he did great both gigs.
The humor came through more yesterday, I thought.
Yeah, well,
he was ad-libbing a little more. And yeah, he settled into it. His body language was...
What's the thing with the necktie around the leg?
we were giving him a hard time about it. I'm sorry Jeff isn't here to explain the story, but we said, you know, that should be used as a tourniquet, but that just, you know, that's a little bit, you know, MTV late 80s kind of stuff. It's a little weak. And so he gave the tug away to Jeff. I don't know. He didn't seem to appreciate that comment too much, but, you know, I think he hadn't really thought about it either, though.
I think it's a totem. I think he does it for love. I have totems.
I never thought of him as being all that superstitious. But.
Well, why do you think he would wear it? That's what I think. That's my guess. I haven't really interrogated on
that. That was his uniform.
This is like an ongoing joke with
archaeologists. It was part of the niche he's trying to carve out.
This is like an ongoing joke with archaeologists. When you dig up something and you don't know what it is, you're just like, that's religious. Like you just said with the totem.
Totem, like a luck thing. I also know about the ties because I have one. He gave me one that they're his father's ties. His father had hundreds of these ties and has a big box of them. And so you know, I think it's like Gambate or, you know.
Well, maybe that's a tribute to Regis, which would be cool. I could get into that. I could believe that.
Yeah, well,
but you think you're going to get a straight answer out of it?
Spaceships or anything, you said you and me, okay. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe. And our food is unfit to eat. Watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I want you to get mad. I want you to get mad. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore! I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore! I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore! I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Take one.
Watt from Pedro Show. A chunk of music there. We started off with a band called Say Hi to Your Mom and a song called Let's Talk About Spaceships. And then we heard Bankruptcy from Soccer Mom, whose drummer is John Wicks, who also plays drums for Los Pumpkinheads.
Oh, him.
Hey, John. You met him, P.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
He's nice.
He just had twins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Everybody's having twins. I think something is in the water.
It's a fertility.
Some people are having
octuplets.
That's
because
they're implanting. I could give you the details, but there's
a. Then we heard a band from Argentina called Futuro Primitivo and 2 Minutes Hate, which contains a. What was that called?
That's my theme song.
Network?
Oh, yeah. The movie? I'm sick of it. Yeah.
All right.
Crazy, yeah.
Network?
Yeah.
Gets everybody to say that. I think Faye Dunaway's in it.
Yeah.
But that's not her. That's
Peter Finch. Peter Finch.
Peter Finch is like...
Posthumous off.
They make a gig out of his rage. Then we heard The Cosmic Plot with You Can't Stop Progress. And finally, To Get Her by Sailor Alexander. Now, Sailor plays guitar for Stab City. And I was saying I was getting back into Missing Man mode because we've got a tour coming up of the U.S. April 17 to May 24. In the middle, we'll record my third opera. I come up with a new title for it. I ditched the old title. Now I want to call it Hyphenated Man. And Stab City has a residency at Old Town Pub in Pasadena. So they asked Missing Man to play. So the first gig since... When was the last gig, Peek? You were there, right?
No.
Carson? The Warp Tour?
Oh, yeah. Really?
No, it wasn't that long ago, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, really?
It was like August?
August 18th.
Wow.
Brother Mal was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's...
Isn't that funny?
I don't remember, but I remember Brother Mal
was
there.
It was a Liquid Kitty
gig. Anyway, I think it was August 18th.
Raymond was there, too.
And so, yeah, Raymond was there. It's beautiful. So... Let's count those months. September, October, November, December, January, February, March. 7 months till the first gig back is with Stab City. Now, Sailor, that's his real name. I think he's from Redondo. Great name, man.
Yeah.
I could
they were good when they played Harold's with you.
That's right.
Great, man. I was really impressed.
Power Trio.
And they gave me the CD. And,
he has an extreme way of playing guitar.
But live, they were just so much better. Yeah. They need to do a live...
Guy. Did you see him?
They need to record it.
This guy, the way he plays guitar is incredible.
Intense. They got some energy.
His arms and legs and everything flies all over him. Bassy's kind of journeyman. Drummies. But the Sailor is like... Now, this music I just played is some of his solo stuff where he's playing synthesizer and it's all calm. And it's kind of like Mishuka. But, man, he knows how to work a guitar. Much respect. So, actually, Tom getting up there and playing, that's the first time I played with him since a Warp Tour.
Wow.
So, we got some practice. I mean, Raoul's... just did some gigs with the Killer Dreamer in the Midwest, so when he comes back, got some practice and I got to teach him an opera. So this one's different than the other two operas I had.
So Hyphenated, is that...
doesn't have a beginning, middle, end like the other two. This one has just middle. But to me it makes sense because I'm middle-aged. It's kind of about me.
So it's like the core of the continuum in the middle.
You know, Part of it is the little creatures in the Bosch paintings. And then part of it is some theories I have about the Wizard of Oz. And I was thinking about it when I was pedaling this morning. Did Dorothy have a love interest?
That's a good one.
Yeah, because most schmaltz movies, you know, there's got to be a love.
Toto.
Or Kansas. Really, she doesn't have a love interest in that. She's like a girl, and that's part of my theory. It's a coming-of-age story for a woman, a young woman, learning about men and all these trips they go through to be men, what they think of as men.
Yeah, you should get their little quality from the wizard.
Right, you need the little, the medal, or you need the diploma, yeah. Or the fucking clock.
Because the guy, it's the guy who wrote it, right?
Bob.
Yeah, that dude, he used to tell stories. A lot of those things were all variation. He had a collection of all kinds of stories that just got kind of reader digested down to the story that we know.
Yeah,
he had a pumpkin.
Several Oz books. There's several Oz books. Also, he was involved in some business stuff or something.
He was pretty comfortable in his day, so he used to hang out and tell stories for kids.
Some kind of marketing guy or something. I mean, an early version. You should read up on that. But the story is kind of interesting because when I was a kid and watching the movie, you know, it took me a while to realize that the three principals, I guess you call, they're the farmhands. They're the ones that have been working on the farm that she's growing up with. And they all have this big problem with esteem, right? And the wizard gives it to them. I mean, her big... It seems the women, you know, you're either going to be a good witch or a bad witch, but you got to be a witch.
Not a lot of options.
Some kind of witch. There's a lot of the Lollipop Guild and the monkeys.
Those are trippy
characters. Yeah, there's a lot in the pop field of poppies.
Yeah.
In the poppies, what's up with that?
The whole thing. Well, there's one of those Oz books where there's flying heads.
They had Pumpkinhead in one of them, too. So,
no, they got like little wings, they fly around, they're just heads. Yeah. So, worth investigating. So, if people want to have a little hint of my thing, but. In some ways, it is kind of like my older days because they're really tiny tunes. And the way I wrote it was interesting for me because I can't play guitar very well. But I wrote them all on the guitar.
Oh, wow.
On purpose, and then wrote the bass lines to this palsy shit. And just to get myself out. Actually, in the Minutemen days, I would write some songs on guitar. I can't really hold a pick, you know, I just...
What kind of guitar would you use when you're writing, let's say? Do you have a favorite?
I don't have many guitars. For this opera, I used one of the guitars that D-Boone's Pop gave me, of his.
Ah, now that adds a little dose of magic to this little Wizard of Oz.
This one's from Kent, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah, it's a trippy one. It's a rosewood.
Was it one that he used on tour? Or?
Sometimes. It's not the... I have the purple one, too. That's the one he used a lot more. But that one, that one was in the boat when it wrecked. And all the strings got busted. Oh. And so I never put new strings. In fact, I had a freak out. I've only really looked at it once. Twice. Because the first time I looked at it, I mean, it was many years later, and I opened up the case, and it... D. Boone used leather straps, and there was an odor to it. It was just like
trippy,
him.
Huh?
Yeah, and I could fucking see him for like a few seconds. I wasn't expecting it. I opened up the case. Mm,
there it is.
Yeah. Well, no, this one's still on.
More leather.
Yeah. And so I never put string. I never touched that one. But the other one, the one that I used for this opera. It's a black one. It's painted black. And the first time I got out of the case was to let Nails do the solo to Boiler Man on the first opera. It came the, I think it's fifth or sixth song. It's where I meet D. Boone. It's called The Boiler Man. And so I didn't tell him this. I just brought it, you know. And then it came time to do the song. We did one song at a time. And so I just pulled this guitar out and I give it to Nels. I said, okay, now I want you to do a big guitar solo in this song. And will you use this guitar? Nels really ain't into Telecasters. So will you use this guitar here? And I told him the story. I mean, the way we did it, I told him the stories of all the songs. All the songs were a part of the day to tell the story of the life of the Minuteman, using kind of a parallel to my father's life as a sailor, Navy. And so he went for it. So if you listen to that, Contemplate in the Engine Room, that solo is different than all the rest because it's played on that guitar. But of course it's Nels, so
how many takes?
It unifies a lot of things.
Did you do?
No, that was one.
One take?
Nels is like Petra.
One and done?
Yeah, and that old Gibson, they still got deep blue strings on there. I don't want to mess that thing.
Yeah. Brother Matt's got the guitar. D. Boone did all the overdubs to Double Nickels on.
Yeah, you wouldn't even want to touch the knobs, you know. No, that
actually,
be
the knobs weren't in effect because he had a cord going straight out from the pickup.
Oh, really?
In those days, yeah.
I love it.
He went through one of these green thing, tube screamer. It's the only time D. Boone used a box. He never used effects, but for these overdubs for solos on Double Nickels on the Dime. And he used that a lot. There's a famous picture of him playing that guitar with Charlie Hayden with us at McCabe's. That's the same one.
Is that the first time you played with him?
Yes, 120. We only played with him once that time.
You know, that was such a weird trip, just hearing you talk about it, because I went down to that show that night, and there was a big old line out in front, and we didn't get in for the second show. But we hung around long enough to hear D. Boone come outside and just say to no one in particular, "We just jam with this old dude, man." And just going on and bubbling, waxing poetic. It was so wonderful. Now, that's one of my most pleasant D. Boone memories. We didn't even get to see the show. We went home after that, but that made the night, and I hold on to that one with dear joy that was I had no idea that was the only time he played with him.
You know, me and D. Boone, we didn't grow up with jazz, we didn't know about. But Raymond was turning me on to stuff, so I knew about Charlie. D. Boone didn't really know. Yeah, some old dude.
Yeah, but that
actually,
just...
Actually, he was
that,
probably in his late 40s.
That airy sort of enthusiasm, but then it's ironic, then you end up playing with, you know...
Well, veteran. Get this. More than that, Nels is playing Spanish guitar for the Liberation Orchestra, Charlie's band, and that's where I first saw him. And that's when I asked him. I don't know about Nels's new wave stuff and shit. The first time I saw him was with Charlie Hayden. And I asked him to open up. By that time, the Minutemen were gone. And it was early days of Firehose, and I asked him to open up just solo acoustic Spanish guitar.
Really? Wow.
And he did it. And ever since then, I got to play lots with him.
But with Charlie, how did that transpire? Was he on the bill that night, or was he just
No,
he
he's in
out?
The band. He's in the Liberation Orchestra.
Yeah, I heard the stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's in Liberation Orchestra. And I saw this guy playing guitar. He's a very nice man. I was talking to him. He's obviously a little bit younger than the other cats. I think Bobby Bradford was in the band. There was a lot of good musicians in that band. And D. Boone played acoustic Spanish guitar. Not on stage and stuff, but at home and when we were boys. So I just thought, wow, that would be interesting. So I asked him to play the opening act. So Charlie, important guy for doing that. And for playing with the Minutemen. Now, the song we did with him was Little Man with a Gun in His Hand. And we tried to get little. It was sort of like Tom. Luckily, Georgie stayed in time, though. I can't believe Bobby thought I said play out of time. I was turning my finger, you know. I'm pointing at the amp and I'm, you know, lipping, you know, turn up Tom.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Okay, we're at the end of first hour, March 2nd, 2009. Watt Pedro Show, hold tight for hour two. March 2nd, 2009. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. done drugs that would blow your mind tonight. Real fine tonight. Blow your mind tonight. Out of my mind tonight. Tonight. Going out of my mind. Tonight. Out of my mind tonight. Blow you blind tonight. Would you like to come along?
I'd like to come along.
I've got drugs.
Where are you going, man?
I've got drugs.
Can I come wherever
I've
it is,
I've got
man?
Drugs.
I'll do your dope. I'll be a dope man.
Out of the mist, there's a pimp. Out of the mist, there's a hooker. Out of the mist, there's a priest. Out of the mist,
I kissed you.
Out of the mist, how could I miss you with your drugs? Out of the mist, how could I miss you with your druggy ways? Out of the mist, out of the mist. Out of the mist, I kiss your lovely drug-filled lips. You sleazy prostitute, where's your pimp friend? Where's your pimp friend and your priest? As he stood there and lectured to me on how I should live alone.
Fucking priest with a yeast infection.
A drug problem that never existed. Out of the mist, I kissed your drug-filled lips.
The second hour is the band from Belgium called the Dead Zulus, and they had a tune called What? My name.
Cool.
Or my father's name. Kind of a tradition. Then we heard the Frogs from Wisconsin. Bob was telling us about interesting things about Wisconsin. And I've Got Drugs Out of the Mist. And then we heard Cayudin, something live from OWKMJ.
It's a code.
Yeah, it's a code. And then we heard a couple demos. YTF by Trio Band Desital and Omachi. I should know this because they're from Italy. Omachidio by Pat Pend. But it's a Pat period, Pen period. So I think patent pending.
Patent pending.
Hi. So, Pete, no couch people.
No couch people. I have one that but is now my roommate.
There's not one not here, but there's one in your pad.
Yeah.
And now it's gone further than just couch surf.
We had to stop, you know, after 6, 7, 8 people last month. I need to stop.
Have a break.
Did you
have more people inquiring?
Well, you can set a level whether or not you're available.
Threshold.
Yeah, threshold. It's kind of weird because after they're all gone, I felt very lonely.
So you're jonesing.
Yes, and I try to keep in touch with most of them after they've gone back, and most of them, they were on vacation, so they basically just went back to work.
Oh, you mean they're couch tour?
Yeah. So, and my job is to make sure that all of them are grown into their full potential, best people that they can be, so I have to keep in touch and make sure that they do so.
Right.
Maybe that's why they see you at the end of the tour.
Nurturing, man.
Yeah.
Right. Your nurturing side of you.
So maybe the new one then will figure out a way to...
I can see Pete in a few years. She'll be one of the ladies with the pigeons and the cats.
And the cats, absolutely.
That'll be after this financier figures out...
When they get the wagon out. You know. Yeah. Actually, there's some guys doing it, too.
Yes.
There's a cat down at Royal Pond, so it's not all women.
To be fair.
Yeah, they got their spots.
No, guys got the pigeons.
There's a bunch Firmid. Of wild creatures that they got.
I mean, and they've got that, it all worked out. They got hatchback cars, and they got the wagons.
Yeah.
Sacks of chow.
Aspiring to be that.
Well, you intern with couch tour guys.
Yeah.
Then you move up to cats.
But however, couch surfing is the shit, because there is a forum that I feel like is going to take over Craigslist, because you know, one of the main complaints with Craigslist is like, you don't know who you're talking to.
What is Craigslist? I've heard about it. I thought it was like Recycler.
Yeah, it's basically an online recycler.
With
it's just,
is that more?
Just the way it's so Spartan in terms of the graphics, you know, it seems like a
thing where you
it's free bulletin board. Yeah.
Like join bands, no
it's
flakes.
Almost more like the old original Bukowski era LA Free Press, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a revenue thing, you know, the sort of
the business
vice part of that, but
Somehow it's become known for like
illicit activities.
Yeah.
Right?
Because there's a whole section of, you know, chance encounters or something.
A variety of freaks.
So Craigslist?
Yeah.
Happy endings.
So you're selling more than baseball cards from the closet.
Whatever it is that you're into or want, you can find it there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the band ads used to be interesting in Recycler. Must
yeah,
have
I
own
bet.
Transpo.
Well, some bands, isn't that X, the members of X meant that
I remember
way.
There was one, it was have management, have record deal.
Of course.
Wanted drummer, guitarist, bassist. I mean, he had everything but the band. But he had all the.
Which is normal.
Well, that's kind of like the monkeys are like that.
Guilty answering that ad said, beer bust and blues band needs bass. No stars or wimps. Slobs welcome. You end up in a rhythm pig.
Oh, wow.
I love it.
Some of them are like, you know, no flakes.
So,
like when you go, well, I'm kind of flaky. You give me a shot. Must have own equipment.
Yeah, right yeah, now. That's definitely. So with the Couchsurfing forum and things, it's like.
Serious only. I like that one too. Serious only.
Serious
must
only.
Must like prep.
Yeah, so I start making. Wait, come back. So I start putting posts up for little things I
so
need.
So you're saying that the couchsurfing.com is competition for the Craigslist?
Yeah, because they start having like a bulletin board-ish with forum. And so people that can actually check
they
each other.
Community.
Yeah, it's a community.
Check.
Yeah, so I put up little posts like, you know, my car is messed up. And I got a mini specialist contacted me that, well, actually it's a long story, but in short, is that he is going to help me fix my car once and for all.
Oh, that would be great.
And almost, he's going to maybe use it for a book project. Maybe. And
how to heal a lemon?
Yes.
And how to take it back to the factory and get Michael Moore to
fill it. Absolutely. So, and then I put a post up for like, I need web, you know, somebody help me in the web back end of web thing that I was struggling with, and in minutes like somebody's like, oh, I just wrote a book on that, you know, I will help you for dinner, you know. Like,
so it beats hanging out at a coffee house in Silver Lake.
Yes, absolutely.
So Pete, do you feel that, I mean, at this point it sounds like maybe that the integrity factor and reliability of these people is pretty high, whereas Craigslist is more skeptical people are because
you can look
you
at
get
these
the grifter
profile.
Start grifters start coming
predator.
In
predator
predators see an entry way a new entry way into the world
or
well
self.
That's because of the reference system. You can see people, you know, if they've been vouched for
in Craigslist. You don't know anything.
You don't you don't I went to the first local Couchsurfing LA gathering, which happens all the time, and this one was a bonfire last Saturday. Because, you know, if I start asking for favor locally, I kind of have to show up to these things, and it's kind of a weird thing because people came from all kinds of background, and for some reason, if money is involved, it's like completely forbidden. We don't talk about money.
Barter service.
Yeah, it's completely barter.
So you had to do a circumcision.
Yeah. I think you
yeah,
be
like
good
the,
at that.
The Buffalo Surfers, you know. Used to show those films, right? Very educational.
Yeah.
No, that's sexual reassignment.
SPK.
That's different.
That was a bad
call. Anyway, so that's the last I want to say about that.
Yeah, so, but as far as, so you're still using the resource.
Yeah.
But you're not really facilitating people conking in your pad.
Right, but now there's a talk about, like, a gathering as a group and go volunteer our time to do something together. It's kind of going in every
that
which
could be
way.
Good or bad. Burners without borders.
Yeah, well, that's exactly
the small group of people fucking each other.
Oh man!
Yeah, next thing you know,
the last circle bonfire last Saturday, they coincide with a burner group, so it was like over 100 people.
It's a burner,
Burning Man.
And you have little beach burns once in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like
so
mini.
Whoever in the region goes and just burn stuff.
But I still don't
karma.
Get the burners.
It's like a primal thing.
Family members.
DJ.
Have you gotten
fire
any,
dances.
Oh, have you gotten any bounce out of the widespread exposure of the Watt from Pedro show audience? You know, were those two worlds intertwined maybe? The fans of this show and these couch people, that might be an interesting hybrid there.
They do get random email from people who are looking for, just happen to come upon my website because of the search on Mike. And I'm sorry, I'm drinking.
Well, I'm here to turn people on to some new sounds, so it's my honor and privilege to bring Brother Matt aboard for some Spin Cycle.
Cool, thanks.
This is the intro. Most listeners will never hear this section of the track. DJ. It is used primarily for QAing, mixing, and of course, to create a dramatic effect that will entice the listener to hear more.
Wow. own house?
Yes.
Do you know what that is?
That's a hot sauce.
Did you recognize it?
That's a fun sound.
You know what that is? That's a fun sound, isn't it? I wonder if you know what that was. Have you ever heard it? That's a fun sound.
That's a fun sound, isn't it?
You recognize it? You ever heard it?
I wonder how many of the rest of these noises you can recognize.
Like, bam!
flip, flick, listening, grip, grip, dick in the current light, centric, no metaphors with the thunder in the skin.
Thank you.
much, Brother Man.
Thank you for the spin cycle. Thank you.
Bob was digging that bass sound and synthesizer.
Righteous. Bad.
Right, Bob?
It's very nice. You know, we've been talking about some different kind of bass. You know, Jaco Pastorius to...
to laser bass.
Yeah. Laser bass. Baser face.
Eraser head.
Eraser head. That's a synthesizer. That soundtrack. I think Peter Ivers did that soundtrack.
You know that,
right?
From New Age, New Wave Theater.
New Wave Theater.
They call it New Wave, but that's one, the only show that delivered on some punk rock. You get 45 Grave on there.
It was a cable access, you know, channel.
Were the Germs around there, weren't they?
I don't know. I never saw the show, but we were on the taping.
You used to be able to get the
video. It was set up all the bands. It was, I think it was the Florentine Gardens or something up in Hollywood. I'm not sure. Maybe. But anyway, they set us all up, and then they moved the cameras around to each band.
Oh, yeah.
Do your songs.
They do that on that. Jules Holland is the guy that started that.
The guy had, Peter Ivers, the host, had see-through green plastic cowboy boots, and
he was LA's greatest gay entertainer awesome. Ever, I think. You know?
A t-shirt that, was awesome. That had the rips, and then the rips put back in with safety pins. And one of them said, "Is their life on Mars?" You know, like the boys. And I remember him asking D. Boone, "So what's the fascist scene like in San Pedro?" And D. Boone goes, "You've never been to Pedro."
I think he knew how to get people fired up.
Got a little, took a little personal.
Well, was he being?
He was kind of a small man.
A dick about it, or not ill informed? Would you consider?
No, he was being silly or something.
Because he used to say some weird, like trippy poetry shit, to where he was very, you know, hyperbolic, way over the top.
He was trying to be trippy. I mean, he wasn't trying; he was trippy. Cat.
Well, when he had one of those trippy bands, I mean, he'd go, "Ladies and gentlemen, you know, the Plugs."
So you like, actually saw that show?
Yeah, it was used to be on a show.
Some cable access, right?
Going on to this
right?
thing, I think USA had that thing, Night Flight or something. Well, these shows weren't on there, but they were on public access, or they got shown. And then when video cassette first came out, you know, rock was slow to get into the equation. I mean, the Rolling Stones hadn't even released the movie Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus, you know, that TV program. That's when people started to release things like that that had never been broadcast. And this New Wave Theater, they put together an hour and a half.
Sheila Mockenberg.
Really?
The lady up in Hollywood. Yeah, she was one of Peter's assistants.
Well, he, he put together, I mean, those were severe packages of groups, you know. Or just groups nobody...
Well, this is around the LA scene, you know. But like, yeah.
So I mean, you would have like Nervous Ginger with 45 Grave and...
punk scene in LA was very small.
But he was...
Most people didn't know about it.
Did you ever see the show? He was this flamboyant gay guy that really broke new ground, kind of, and just being himself and kind of bringing in these cool bands. And then he was murdered. They never solved it. It sounds fishy. Sure. I mean... You know, it was just hush hush right away, right? It was like this jockey, you know, in Pasadena, Chris Antley. Nobody discussed it afterwards.
Yeah, it was very tragic. Because he was a nice guy. Yeah, he was kind of silly and stuff, but he was.
But he had something, you know, he had it, took it to a higher level in terms of just bringing together some bands that couldn't get on TV, and getting them all on at one time.
Getting access for bands at that time, when the only other cat who was letting like Square Johns here was Rodney.
Yeah.
Bingenheimer. He would play on K-Rock.
He was amazing the way he bridged that Brian Wilson to whatever.
Yeah, he would play. He was very nice. He was a DJ at Starwood.
Yeah, and then wasn't he? Well, what was that? Rodney Bingenheimer's English disco. There's pictures of Iggy at that place.
That's before.
Was that on Santa Monica Boulevard? Where was that located?
That's before his radio show.
Where was that located?
It was called Rodney's English Disco.
Yeah. They have pictures of Iggy from there, like in, you know, 74, 75.
So yeah, the Runaways and all that.
Well, that's where he does the little theater where he had Ronnie whip him in the Nazi suit.
Yeah, I picture Kim Fowley being involved in that somehow because
I remember Ronnie told me about that. He said Iggy had come earlier and said, "I want you to come in to this thing I'm doing, this play, and beat me in a Nazi outfit." And Ronnie said he couldn't really hit him hard. And Ig was telling him, "Hit me harder, hit me harder," and he just couldn't do it, you know, it was his friend. So some guy took the thing out of Ronnie's hand and
oh, man.
So he gets up in the street. I mean, it goes outside the place into the street, and he's all bloody and everything. And Ig runs off, and Ronnie said he didn't see him for years after that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think the maybe the hospital thing came up right around then.
Wow. Well.
Yeah.
You would never know that. I mean, Ronnie's image seemed a little fiercer when none of us really knew about
really
him.
No, he's really nice guy. He took care of a lot of cats and possums and raccoons and.
Well, just the stories of, I mean, I can just imagine Iggy at a certain degree of wasted and him tying a belt to the two of them so that Iggy doesn't go jump in the pool or whatever. You know, it's like.
Oh, there's stories in Please Kill Me.
Yeah. Yeah. I read that when it came out. I loved it. It really makes me want to read it again, I guess.
Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, March 2nd, 2009. What from Pedro Show, hold tight for hour 3. March 2nd, 2009. It's the third hour of the Live from Pedro Show.
how I profess my love to you, baby. Heading down a 4 or 5 lane tonight, just to try to get across this Ellen town. It's got about 3 hours worth of traffic to get to you, babe. I'll try to make it within an hour just to find you. I think I'll get there, babe. I know I'll get there. But will you be true? Will you be true now? I got to know, little darling. Tell me who's loving who, babe. I've been here about 9,000 miles from now, babe. Just to try to get across town. I looked at every passing car and every window and every doorway. Everywhere across town, I called ahead, babe. I called ahead just to tell you how much I love you, babe. Instead, I got my own voice. I'll go and message, babe. Something kind of blue, babe. In every single window, babe. You had me stammering looking for you. At the last that I recall, babe, the last that I recall, babe, you were dressed in a pretty blue. I'm rushing home just to find you, just to get across town, just to get to you. Tell me who's loving who. Thank you.
here not long, but just wondering about. I'm sitting here now, darling. I'm thinking about how much of a rush I had to get across the town. It was just like magic, babe. Just like a rabbit out of a hat. Just like a thing I had to do. Just to show you, darling. Just to show you, babe. Now tell me who's loving who. Oh, who's loving who? Oh, that's the question I'm asking you, babe. Who's loving who, dear mom? Ow, it's what I'm asking you, babe.
Bought from Pedro Show. Started the third hour out with Sowing Seeds of Dumb by Solar Wimps. Then Glass Sun by Gigantic Hand. And Salty Breeze by Slings. Salty Breeze by Slings. I think they're Orange County. And Who's Loving Who from Shane O'Brien. Now, Shane O'Brien's an iron worker here in Pedro, and he plays blues on the side. He, remember that 100 guitar thing? Well, yeah, it's actually 64 guitars, 20 basses, and a drummer.
Is that Glenn Branca, or what's
Branca's
that?
Branca's Symphony No. 13 at Disney, and Shane was there. Yeah, he never heard of Branca or any of that kind of music, but everybody was sitting around him, helped him out, and he was really into it.
Pitching.
Yeah, he brought his book down, you know, to show the guys at work. Had the guys sign, musicians sign it so he could show them. And that's something
cool.
New they just recorded in town, local. I think some gigs are coming up at Harold's. Somebody was telling me.
I'd like to check that place out.
You never been to a gig there, Pete?
No.
Oh, you've been missing out.
Yeah, there's a...
Are they going to be receptive of me as an outsider walking in?
A lot of the people at the gigs...
It's getting better, but it could go away soon. You know?
Cause if
you don't want to get there
well,
a couple
not,
hours early,
I'll
you know?
Definitely show up.
Yeah, it's good to feel it. Then you can, you know, let it out.
I love the feeling of being alienated and outsider.
Well, they have the dude is like Isaac Hayes, only about a foot taller. And he threw that guy, dude that was dancing, but kind of a, you know, he kind of spun him the hell out of there. He went up there, no dancing.
I know, but I thought that guy was okay.
Yeah.
Isaac Hayes? Or the dancer?
The dancer.
He was doing interpretive.
That guy was okay.
Yeah, but you know what? He was, he knew your music a little bit. I really believe the guy was.
No, that guy, he was from Hungary or something. Because he started yelling, this is communism.
Well, that's a good...
That's awesome.
Yeah, to do that in Pedro with an accent, you know, not acceptable. This is...
He goes, I ran away from this.
They went Roosevelt on him, man.
I ran away from this situation. I think the guy thought he was Baracho, but he wasn't. He was just getting into it, and he was kind of tripping.
He wasn't threatening anyone, because I was standing right there.
I know.
He didn't invade anyone's space.
Dude, he was right in front of me when I was playing. Doing the interpretive dance.
Yeah, but he was within Pete Townsend's striking distance, you know. He could have broken the Rickenbacker over.
No way. I ain't into that.
You haven't done that since you threw a shoe back at someone? Or?
Once I threw a quarter. We were getting hit with a lot of money. This is in fire hose days. And I was at Roseland, New York. And a bunch of money was coming up.
Yeah. Big money, like silver dollars.
Oh, like nickels and quarters. And this quarter hit me, and I picked it up, and I threw it
But, you know, I didn't, I'm not that good of an aim, and I hit the guy, the guy next to the guy through it was totally into the gig, and I just saw his face turn.
Aww.
You learned a lesson that day.
So, yeah, it's like when you're a kid. I never threw that thing back again. I used to never really, I don't know why that upset me, because usually I took it.
Well, these, well, hey, it wasn't like baseball where they throw D batteries at you from the upper deck.
I got hit with battery.
What now? What is that?
9-volt battery. I got hit with C cell.
Well, let me ask you, what is that American equivalent of gobbing? I mean, that seems a little bit more hardcore. That's you could kill someone with a D battery.
Man, I've been hit with a lot of stuff.
But what is the idea when they throw it? Is
paper bags of puke, paper bags of shit, cups of piss.
So we've heard this one. Well, that's disgusting. But I mean, was this in tribute though, the batteries and that
probably can't get as injured.
The non body fluids that were thrown at you with, you know, metal or
cigarettes. Yeah, the metal
things. But the batteries, is that supposed to be like right on, man, or is it, are they trying to stone you off stage?
That's, I don't know, what do you think? Yeah, I didn't yeah. ask anyone.
Either way, I don't like it.
What was the purpose of that bag of shit?
Yeah. Excuse me.
So you didn't give them your Keith Richards, like,
yeah.
No.
Either you cats cut that out or we don't play. No.
He just kept going.
Soldier on, man.
And, you know, this I live to tell. Goes. About it.
Isn't like Metallo KO where you can hear these beer bottles clanking off the guitar neck, man? Geez.
Yeah, I never had a beer break on me, but I've had them break around me. I mean, last summer in some Stooges gigs, there was beer bottles coming up. Okay, and I don't know if people intend to hurt people. Sometimes I think they just get into it, and you know.
Well, John Lennon said when the Beatles played in Amsterdam that if a fight didn't break out at a live gig, then they didn't play with the shit. They were flat.
There was a lot of fights. They were flat. Especially in the old days. It'd be around the end of the gig because of the alcohol, and usually didn't have much to do with the band.
But sometimes it did. I saw a fight at Lords of New Church, and it had that, like, Manson, Stone, devil worshiping, bad, hard drug crowd that I'd ever seen. And the imagery that they played with that death stuff, I don't, it was kind of tongue in cheek, but these people were taking it seriously, and they were not just fighting to pop, tell someone to shut up. They were like up for.
Well, I was with the second minute Alex's, and there was a fight break up.
It was a guy in San Diego.
It's just alcohol and stuff.
Did you,
yeah,
you never
guy
had
in
a
San Diego and Banyan gig? He was.
That's
he
right.
He was getting mobbed.
In fact, that guy conked in his house.
He did.
After the guy got beat up, you conked in his house.
He left the gig. No, I usually have. His name's Chuck. He's good people.
Oh really?
Oh.
That was just a liquored up thing.
Where was
he
that?
He was attacked.
Because I was going to attack him myself.
The Casbah? Where was it?
I was really close. One more.
The guy with the camera.
No. The guy with the camera ran after him.
Yeah.
And probably touched him.
That's my friend.
Okay, yeah. He took care of that guy. Chuck
but,
was cool.
But you know what I mean? Does it really have to do a lot with the band? I don't think so. I think it's liquor, being around women.
So did
yeah,
you
women have guys? That effect
no,
on
no,
guys.
No, getting competitive with each other, maybe.
It's Pedro, macho Pico world.
Fight.
But did your band ever get punched?
The fights
though?
Don't just happen in Pedro. No, this was in San Diego she's talking about.
But did you ever have...
actually, Ocean Beach, which is a laid-back kind of Hermosa Beach town. It doesn't matter.
It's not that laid-back.
It doesn't matter. Ocean Beach is...
It's, you're getting close to the military. It's not that laid-back, you know. But
I don't know.
Did you ever have anyone?
It's got a burger place called Ho Dad's.
And Grimmy's is down the street, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of laid back surfer town.
But did you get?
But it doesn't matter
punched
because the
at
situations
yourself?
Happen at those things. Probably cover bands have fights going on.
Especially
those
bands, I'm sure.
It's, you know, people. Some people may be challenged with social skills, being amongst other people, and especially even more challenged, liquored up, or I don't know, maybe they're bringing some rage from the office.
Did you go to, what, did you, you said no. You went to Greenland with the Stooges?
No.
No?
Iceland.
Iceland. Is that when you went on the northern tour where you could see the global...
I saw a bunch of stuff on a trip there. I saw glaciers. I saw geysers. I swam in a natural spring lagoon. I saw the only place where the Teutonic plates are exposed.
What's that look like?
You know, it's a big old...
Is it pretty trippy?
Big fault.
Yeah, it's a big fault, right. And it's actually, you know, when they had this... They had to orally memorize the law. So they had some guy who'd holler, who'd memorize the thing and holler the law, and they used this place that had really good acoustics in that fault. They'd have a big council meeting, and this guy would yell the law. Remember, they always go on the ice for the furs on those icebergs, always in threes, right? Because if it ends up two, they become the married couple.
Yeah, right. That's where a triangle becomes a lying segment, yeah.
And they fight.
And it's eat or be eaten.
Yeah, so next month I'm going to try to travel around the U.S. And I'm gonna,
you're on tour next month?
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out over there. I'm looking for couches.
Couch tour?
I'm trying the organic kinds and the website kind. But I'm shooting New Orleans Jazz Festival. Did I mention that?
No.
Yeah, I'm heading there, and I'm official photographer.
It looks like a pretty interesting bill they have this year.
Yeah.
You know, some really successful mixed in, more so than ever before, maybe, but a good blend.
Neil Young will be there at the end. So it's going to be my first experience couch surfing, and of course I don't know moderation.
In New Orleans, moderation's not in the vocabulary. Yeah, right. Would you say so, Brother Man?
I'll be there like 12 days.
Like a hurricane. Yeah.
So are you playing any festival this year? Are you going back to the old school stage, the Warp Tour?
I don't know.
You
I
had
know,
some fans yesterday that saw you.
I'm going to try to do another tour in the fall, because I'm going to try to get the record out in the summer and then do a tour on it.
With the Missing
Man? So I have, yeah, with Missing
Man. So you guys are going to do two tours.
Yeah. The first tour, this tour is called Crack in the Opera, because that's what we're doing.
How many dates are you doing?
It's 36, and in between we'll make the record.
And then do another 30-plus dates after?
No, in between the 36. It's from April 17 to May
24.
Do the math.
Hey, I might meet you somewhere out there.
So they will come back wise men after recording a record, an opera.
At Tony Mamone's studio in Brooklyn. Tony Mamone was bass player for Garubu.
Yeah, that's great. That's a welcome addition.
So, very excited.
Is he producing the record? Or?
He's going to be there for sure. Oh. Brother Tony.
So you don't have a producer. It's kind of like Steve... Albini just records the music. He doesn't produce.
Steve Albini's in Chicago.
Yeah. No, do you have a...
Some friends of mine are going to record with him soon. From Tokyo, Light, that band that I toured with. In fact, it was 1 year ago this week I was on tour in Japan with Brother Sister's Daughter. First time I got to play the smaller underground scene. You know, it was very interesting.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, I had three big adventures there. Two albums and a tour.
What about this last bit you did? Is that going to be released? Any of those released?
That's why we recorded them.
I know, but I mean, it sounded like you were quick on the mix when you came back, and I haven't heard anything since, so wondering.
No, they're being mixed. They were quick on the record.
Okay.
We did one album in 2 days and one album in 3 days. And, Mr. Shimmy's mixing the one I did in May with them, and that's the one with Richard Meltzer's Spiels.
Uh-huh.
It's called Spielgusher. And there's a...
Mr. Shimmy is a perfect name for him, too.
50 poems, pieces, and 15 other pieces of music, so it's... 13 other pieces of music, so it's 63 songs. Bits. Kind of long, I think. It's 72 minutes.
How long have you been working on this?
It's interesting. 3 days. We did it in 3 days. We came up with 65 pieces of music in 3 days.
Wow.
Well, him and his wife are amazing musicians. as Nels can tell you, because they were the same two that did the brother, sister, daughter. And that was only 9 songs, but they were longer songs.
Is Mr. Shimmy the guy that plays himself? He actually plays that real kind of soothing soft guitar.
He plays all kinds of guitar.
But I mean, he has that aspect.
Yeah, in fact, he was involved with the Yoko Ono recording, the Plastic Ono band, last 2 weeks ago.
That's cool. Because he seemed to have like this sort of soothing, almost Jerry Garcia-like feeling to, if that's the one that I've heard on many songs that you played on, is, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, like Jimmy, too.
Yeah, it's a soothing...
He's a great guitarist. So but he's a big, huge a fan of Mr. Nels. That's why I brought him. When I was recording with him in May, he was talking a lot about him. And I said, yeah, well, I'll bring him.
So back to Couchsurfing. No, just kidding. No, so you'll be in New York, I'm sorry, when? April 16, you said?
Well, 9 of these gigs on this tour... or with Jay Maskus.
Yeah.
No, Dinosaur. But Jay's playing with him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. The Southeast. So yeah, I'll be up in Northeast around first week of May.
Oh, just missed
it. There'll be a couple weeks coming back.
Not cool.
So 36 songs?
No, 30 songs.
30 songs?
Yeah.
How many days do you think you're going to take? 3 days to record it?
Yeah.
No, Europe this year?
Europe, probably not. I told you I want to make a spring tour and a fall tour of U.S.
This is going to be a break.
This tour is to... do the album, get ready and do the album, and then the other tour will be to tour the album.
I see.
So let me ask you, does it feel kind of like maybe not so bad to take a little breather from having your passport stamped, you know, a zillion times, to just kind of not be flying off a lot here and there?
Well, you're driving in the boat.
Yeah.
I know what, I'll take you to Thailand.
A slow boat to China.
I like going to foreign countries.
A slow boat to China.
But you know, think about it. Last Mike Watt tour in the U.S. was 2004, so we're coming on 5 years, so it's good to come back.
Yeah, they might have to force you to retire the man in the van thing if you don't get out there at least every 5 years. You know?
I just want to make sure that I factor it into some point of this tour.
I wasn't against touring. It was just I had obligations for the Stooges. So it was hard to plan a full U.S. tour.
Right.
But this is, you're breaking new ground with the idea of recording a new record.
No,
Pharoahs
did it with the third album, Iffin. No.
Out of town,
Ohio.
Did you record it?
It's done in Painesville,
okay.
Ohio, which is the place where Perubu used to record at Suma Studio. And we did it in the middle of a tour.
Well, it would seem to me that makes more sense than...
1989? So maybe 20 years ago I did.
I'm almost surprised that not everyone does that, but I think very few do. I know Neil Young likes to play the songs live before he records them. On crowds that don't know them is kind of weird. But I think it makes sense. You should be tight, but yet you should be at your peak, right in the middle. Peak. Good idea.
We'll see.
Are you going to try and get the thing released this year? Or are we going into the next
decade? Bob, this is why I'm going to do the fall tour.
A promotional tour?
Well, I guess. But the record will be out, hopefully, and then tour on it. This tour is to make it. The other one is to...
break it.
Play it for people who might have it.
That's cool.
Because when we play these things for people, it's going to be new for them.
You know, I think people like that. And then you'll have that other side that will really appreciate seeing you just before you record. Because I would think a band would be pretty much have their chops down when they're ready to, after 30, you know, or however many dates.
It's in the middle.
You know, 15 to 18 approximately, sure. These are pearls to be passed on. clams.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know what it'll be. You roll the dice. But Tom and Raul, I have faith in them. And I haven't played with them a lot since the summer. So I thought this was an interesting way to do it.
Yeah.
Instead of hole up in the practice pad, why not do it in front of people?
That's a significant number of songs.
Just testing it out. You know? See what they say. Is there any batteries throwing to the stage?
No.
See what kind of things you collect at the end of the night.
So this sounds like, lengthwise, it's about the same, you know, say, Engine Room or the Second Opera.
Yeah, but good, different way of doing it. The Second Opera was 9 songs.
Well, 30 and 43, that's the clip that I grew up with. I like the number.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. This is kind of a return to some of the old days.
You know, let me.
But it's not going to be Minuteman, but it's some ideas of the old.
Well, you know,
I have in small format tunes. But it was just if you look at the Bosch paintings, are made up of a lot of little images, and it struck a resonance in me, man. I've been here before with some earlier music I used to do.
Do you think that?
And I actually got the idea when the Bujamikano documentary was done, because I really couldn't listen to Minutemen for a long time because it would make me sad, and I had to hear a bunch of it for that documentary to be part of it, and it was trippy the way those songs were. They were really little, no filler.
No, none.
But the Second Opera was about sickness, and if you've ever been sick, time really slows down, seems to slow down. So they had to be long, drawn-out things. You know, these are operas, these are pieces, so it's not just musical mechanics. I'm trying to transmit thematic stuff, huh?
Well, that's a tight story. I mean, to fit that in 43 minutes, you know, things like Tommy or longer, or unless you want to do a mini opera.
It is mini opera, I guess. I don't know. I call them operas because they're all about one thing.
Yeah, so it has
that's all. They're all united. Some people call them, I was told, concept records or song cycles.
That's what
I've been given.
Tommy was the one they always said was the first concept, or Days of Future Past, Moody Blues, you know. But you don't think of it that way so much as that it's a tight story from beginning to end.
For the one reason why I call them that is because I never did that shit. Before Contemplating the Engine Room, I didn't write big pieces. I wrote small things. So this idea of having whole things united around one trip was new for me, so I called it opera. Okay, punk opera.
Well, you know, I heard Pete Townshend said that the idea of an opera, he felt, was that in his lyrics he could take more liberties with the narrative. And things that would seem that doesn't make sense wouldn't work in a film. Because it's auditory, you can take more liberties with the extreme.
Well, I was kind of thinking that I just can't get across what I want in one song. I need more songs. I need a whole album worth.
Well, this piece you did with Meltzer...
That's where I'm at.
Wondering if these little pieces... are those long pieces?
That's Richard. Richard gave me 50 poems, 50 spiels. And so that's, you know, that right there set that up like that.
But didn't you say that you did a goodly number of instrumentals?
No, I did the music last May for these.
Right, but
he gave me the spiels first.
But there weren't some that without spiels? Just they all had a spiel then? They all had vocals?
No, the spiels were put to them later.
Okay.
All the music was done as music, little bits. We'd come up with something, take some kind of riff and put it to the other two,
They play, turn on the recorder, get a couple minutes of it.
Well, it sounds like
their English isn't
sparring.
I mean, I gave them the Richard spiels, but their English. Richard uses a lot of irony and satire. Mm. That's some of the hardest stuff to translate.
You can't really. You can't.
Yeah, you know. So it was more we were coming together as three people to make the music, and then they trusted me to put poems,
sonic poems.
Well, I'll take Richard Spiels that were already done and put them to our musics.
Now, did you... curiously...
That's all I did. I made little guide mixes.
Oh, okay.
Because I think Mr. Shimmy's got better musical ears to make mix. So I gave him the guide mixes where the Spiels go and how they're organized inside the songs, the little bits where the fade-ins, fade-outs. So obviously... with so much stuff, some stuff had to be trimmed down. I didn't want it to be longer than 72 minutes.
This Mr. Shimmy sounds like a good guy to have aboard for any part of it, if it's just a watch. And wow.
And it just tells you about music, because like I said, it's English.
Well, you know,
it's
those
coming
short
along
mixes.
And stuff, but a lot of this stuff is just through
intuition.
No, we're communicating, but it's not like me and you right now.
It's natural.
This is not his first language.
Yeah.
But music can make bridges over gaps like that. And also, he's a very open man.
So you're creating a third language musically to communicate.
Yeah, well,
that is.
We did it by playing together.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But he's got it. I mean, he's got a true heart for music. It's not jive for him. It's not some hustle. He really believes in it. He puts everything in. He's got into it.
Well, just those few short pieces I've heard off either your MySpace or wherever it was, Brother, Sister, Daughter.
That's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal stuff.
And some of those things you heard, those are the there's 13 instrumentals, and there's 50 to... there's 50 spiels. 13 instrumentals, and 4 spiels are by themselves. So there's 46 with music and spiel together. 13 music, if you want to know how the record breaks down.
Wow, that's interesting. Now,
it's a trippy record, but I love Richard's poems. I love his persona and his mind.
Well, you know, one thing I
his stuff, he's...
You guys use their titles.
D. Boone, you know... 10 of the spiels, actually, are 10 that he wrote back in Minutemen days. We were going to collaborate with him and record. Us three Minutemen and Richard Meltzer were going to make a 10-song record.
Was that before and Buzzer Howl or after?
No, we were going to do it. He gives us the lyrics. I bring them over, you know, no music yet. We're going to write... music to these lyrics he just gives me. I go over to D. Boone's as we just get back from REM tour, and I give him to D. Boone a copy of them, because I got a copy. I said, D. Boone, I'm going to look at these, I'm going to make up some music, you look at them, you make up some music. And he's real sick with fever, and he says, don't worry, I'll take him with me. And he takes him in the boat with him to that trip to Arizona.
So
we never got to do it because he got killed. But Richard, when he gave me the 50 spiels, 10 of them are from those days.
So that was your last conversation, huh, about that?
Yeah, yeah.
So then
I said, you're really sick, dude. You look red like a lobster, man. And he said, well, I'm not going to drive. Don't worry, I'll be in the back.
That's almost like one of those portents.
So I give him the words, you know. So the Richard Meltzer words, it's a connection back to the Minutemen days in a way.
So he just has some...
Man, Richard Meltzer was a huge hero to me and D. Boone.
Well, did he just out of his...
You know, you talk about Buzzer Howl because we printed a letter.
He helped
the
get us to go see you because of that letter, though.
Yeah.
He carried some respect.
That's what happened.
You know.
He,
My friend Fritz...
sent me a card in the mail, an ace of spades. And he says, one day you're going to want to play this. I wrote him. It was kind of a lull in the band. But people like already all figured us out. We were this
did these little things and like this, and maybe there's no more to say about it. So I sent him back. I said, maybe it's time to play the card. And Richard takes that Bean Spill EP I'm told you about.
Mm-hmm.
Them five songs that came out of Carducci's label, Thermidor. And he did a record review of it in Cream Magazine. And he called it Scientist Rock. And it was like, wow. Because Richard Meltzer wrote lyrics for Blue Oyster
Cult. He wrote great
lyrics.
We read
his books and we read his stories about rock in the magazines. And then to meet him, he had this band called Vom in L.A. And he had a very intense radio show on KPFK called Hepcats from Hell, where he played very interesting, wild music. Some of those shows, it was like a midnight to six thing or midnight to four.
Oh, yeah. Like
and on a Saturday.
Andrea
and I'd be, no, way before.
No, way before.
In fact, she takes his spot later on.
Ah, okay.
But I would eat L and like listen to the show, and he was just the greatest, and the chance to work with him. So when this opportunity came up, Mr. Shimmy, I was like, wow. Yeah. This is great.
That's quite a triangle there, you know?
Well, this is about music. Music's like this. It makes connections where you'd never expect.
Well, I mean, my friend Fritz kind of introduced me in a minute, and we kind of got into you via Meltzer. You know, he wrote these columns in the Reader. And so when Buzzer Howl came out, that just completed the circuit there to see that on there. That tie was
Meltzer,
like...
He lives in Portland now.
Yeah.
Richard Meltzer, great cat. I had a chow with him. I was on tour. And I had cutting up some habaneros. And I got them all over my fingers and in my eyes. Uh-oh. And here comes Richard to go chow. And they just sealed my eyes up. So I had to do the whole chow with him with my eyes closed and just tearing.
Oh, more irony here.
Yeah.
Well, do you think he had some of those pieces? Was he kind of like waiting and holding those and not wanting to violate your space in terms of some using that material?
I don't know.
Did he written? Or
I don't know.
Did he come to you with it or, you know?
What, the Spielgusher?
Well, the stuff that he had written, you know,
the 10?
Back in 84 or whatever.
The 10, I don't know whose idea. I think it was me and D. Boone. We asked him. I mean, we just in love with the guy, man.
But I mean, this with this project...
I think he was going to play saxophone, too.
He'd have been a good one. He did with the words in his columns, that's for sure.
Yeah, he just...
Was it like called something like Musings at 3 a.m.? Or I don't know what the title of his column was, but it's interesting.
He's just great. But anyway, that's a... Shimmy's working on that, and when we get that all mixed up, then we move on to the brother, sister, daughter.
Wow.
But that's they're both all done recording.
So in a weird way, that'll affect Mr. Shimmy's production. That I wonder what I see what you mean. I wonder what he makes of the cadence.
He's
of
on a Salyut tour right thing. Now, some cool. Like kind of J-pop lady, and then he's got a little tour with Cornelius. Him and his wife play a lot with Cornelius as the bass and drummer. He's a very busy guy, but he just such a great cat, man. He wants to... That's one of the lame things of this tour I have to do in May, because it's when he comes to L.A., he really wanted to come to Pedro again. Mishuko came to Pedro last time.
He did?
Yeah, I took him in the kayak.
Oh, cool.
One at a time, because I didn't have another one. Mm-hmm. And they'd never been in one. I pushed them out.
Wow, that's funny.
You do that to people.
They called it San Pedro. It was because it was January. Yeah, it was like 70. And then, you know, Tokyo's not like that. But, yeah, they're great people. It's a trippy eye ran into them. Music is strange the way things just happen. It's a beautiful thing. May have a band, Lashuka and Petra, called If By Yes. And both of them, with her, are the core of the Plastic Ono band.
That's
the resurrected.
So have they just been recording, or have they done a couple?
They just finished it.
A whole new record.
Yuka.
Wow.
Huh?
Yuka.
Yuka's in there. Is she playing keyboards, or?
Yeah.
Cool. Wow. I think, you know, Yoko has something left to say, and maybe the others are will bring it. That should be an interest, some dynamic energy there.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
That's a trip. You know. Well, we're at the end of the show. March 2nd, 2009, I'm off from Pedro's show. Keep your powder dry.